the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 16th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Andrew Pascal, the president and CEO of Play Studios, on the growth of social gaming and the importance of going public with his company. This month, IGT celebrates 25 years of Wheel of Fortune slots, the brand players seek on every casino floor for its life-changing jackpots. Learn more at IGT.com/WOFslots25. From Silicon Gaming to WagerWorks and from Wynn Resorts to Play Studios, Andrew Pascal is one of gaming's most entrepreneurial individuals. As an operator and a supplier, he brings a unique approach to any effort he considers. His tenure with Play Studios has been his longest, as he has helped to pioneer the field of social gaming. Play Studios recently announced it is going public as a special projects acquisitions company with former MGM CEO Jim Murray. And Pascal explains what that means for the company and its future. He spoke with me from his offices in Las Vegas in April. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. We're here today with one of the most unique entrepreneurs, I think, in the gaming business, Andrew Pascal. Andrew, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, you've been involved in a lot of startups in your life, from WagerWorks to Silicon Gaming, and now, of course, Play Studios. But you've been with Play Studios now for quite some time. Why has this been such a fulfilling journey for you?
I think it's just a culmination of all the other things that I've done. You know, it was an opportunity to do something that was creative, technically challenging, required a really diverse collection of people and disciplines and skill sets. And, you know, at its core was about an industry that I love, which is, you know, all things related to gaming. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for all those reasons, it's been able to not just hold my interest. I just think there's so much opportunity that we've yet to fully realize that it's got us all, you know, charged up and still deeply engaged.
Sure. Well, let's talk about Silicon Gaming. You know, that was such a unique project there. The machines and the games you developed were really cutting edge. And, you know, I think they were way before their time, especially when you consider what's coming out these days. Well, when you look back on that, do you think it's definitely was before its time?
Oh, for sure. I think that if you really think about it, we introduced the Odyssey, which was the product that we created back in 1996.
Right.
And it really was groundbreaking. I mean, slot machines back then were still largely kind of these physical reel spinning slot machines.
Right.
And so the whole world of, you know, digital technology and media, more specifically, to create these far richer and more immersive experiences had not yet been brought to the gaming industry or to the casino industry. And so that was the idea of that company, was to tap into the technology community up in Silicon Valley and the creative community up in San Francisco and really completely reimagine the slot machine experience. So it's funny is my partner, Paul Matthews, last year for my birthday, he found a bunch of the machines that we actually created as part of Silicon Gaming. And so they're in our offices, and to look at them and to play the suite of games that we had created back then, they would hold up today.
Oh, absolutely.
Without a doubt, the richness of the visuals and the production values and the game mechanics and the depth of the experience and the communal play and all the things that we introduced back then, I think many would still define as being right there with the best of the games that are in the market.
Sure. Well, I used to love to play the blackjack and the video poker games, you know, with the hands that dealt the cards.
the Phantom Bell. Yeah, for sure. It was a fun one.
Yeah.
Everyone remembers that game, it seems.
Right.
So your time with Wynn Resorts was really at the peak of Steve Wynn's creativity. You know, he was designing, you know, this incredible facility in Las Vegas, and then he went on to Encore. But you had to run the operations there, and you know that was no small task to do that. You know, with Steve Wynn looking over your shoulder for one thing, but also with, you know, trying to create something new, you know, in the industry as well. I mean, that was certainly, you know, having worked for Steve, I know, you know, he was always a very dynamic boss and somebody who always thought ahead. And so what do you bring from that experience to Play Studios?
Look, there were a lot of amazing lessons that I draw upon from my time working for both Wynn Resorts and its predecessor Mirage Resorts. You know, there's a relentless attention to the details and the quality of the experience and the consistency with which you execute and deliver. So, you know, those is kind of like a certain discipline that you bring to what you do was something that was deeply ingrained in me growing up inside of the Mirage company. And, you know, so when Steve ultimately formed and started Wynn Resorts with Elaine, it was their ambition to, again, redefine the resort experience here in Las Vegas. And they really wanted to do something that they'd not yet accomplished, which was to establish a quality bar and a service standard that would rival the most luxurious hotels anywhere in the world. And so that really was our principal focus. I mean, the place physically is certainly very beautiful and beautifully designed. There were a bunch of things about it that made it gave it a more human quality. But at the end of the day, you've got to imbue it with the right service culture, and that comes from the people. And so what you might remember is that within the first year, when Las Vegas became the most decorated resort in the world, and when I say decorated, I mean the most recognized by AAA, Mobile, Michelin. It had the 5 red pavilions, the 5 stars, the 5 diamonds, and not only for the hotel, but, you know, across some of its restaurants and spa and facilities. And so, you know, it was just unimaginable at the time that you could deliver at that level of quality with the kind of scale that we were. So, you know, something that I know we were all really proud of at the time, and it certainly established a standard that the company and the people that are there have been able to maintain since. And so, you know, there were a lot of things that we tried and applied and learned about, you know, how to, you know, make sure that the teams were fully integrated, very clear about what we were trying to achieve, and intensely focused on delivering on the experience that we wanted for our guests. And so, there were a lot of things that we did in and around learning and development and structural things that we did to create a deep sense of ownership among the people that were responsible for the different aspects of the resort. So there was architecture and design to the organization and our practices that we applied there that were, in my view, I think they were very successful and really core to achieving what we were able to do. And so a lot of those things I've carried forward and I apply in how we've gone about architecting and designing what Play Studios is.
Sure.
You know, Play Studios, even though it's a very different focus in terms of its digital content and it's distributed on these massive platforms, which are the Apple App Store and Google Play and Facebook. And but when it comes right down to it, all of this great content is created and executed by amazingly talented people. And so, you know, you're faced with some of the same challenges, which is how do you get everybody aligned and inspired and focused on the same thing and working together to go and deliver. I think that's one of the unique things about, you know, I feel blessed that I've spent, you know, half my career in the more traditional integrated land-based casino industry and the other half building these technology-enabled content companies and game companies.
Sure.
And people might think, well, those are just so wildly different. And what I've always found really remarkable is that, no, there's so many lessons to be learned in pursuing each of those types of business opportunities that relate to or can be applied in the other case. So it's been amazing.
Yeah, no question. So your the first app that you developed with Play Studios was MyVegas, and certainly was a revolutionary social casino app. I mean, I hadn't seen anything like it in those days. Give us a little genesis of where that idea came from and how the company got started.
Well, when I was at Wynn in running the campus here, I had engaged a former partner of mine, Paul Matthews, to help us resolve our strategy for poker. It was at one of the moments in time. Poker obviously has gone through these different cycles of, you know, potentially being an opportunity and then not. And so we happened to be in one of those cycles where it was felt like there was finally going to get some traction and be approved in a few jurisdictions. And we were trying to think about, you know, what should our strategy be? And so I brought Paul in to help us start to think that through. And it rekindled our relationship, and we always stayed friendly, but we now were in far more frequent contact. And so he's the one that first exposed me to this whole emerging world of free-to-play games and virtual goods. And we would just start talking about how fascinating it is that there's this whole new model that has emerged, which is that people can download and play games for free. And then to the extent that they want to progress faster or more deeply or enjoy certain dimensions of the product they wouldn't otherwise be able to, they have to start spending their money. That is a kind of pay-as-you-go experience was really getting traction. And so I would say that, you know, while we didn't kind of in that moment say, let's go do this, it was just fascinating to both of us that there was this really vibrant market and this new commercial model that was emerging. And so, you know, fast forward, you know, a few years to the latter part of 2010, and I'd felt like, you know, certainly Facebook was blowing up, and the principal activity that was really driving people's engagement and the broad adoption of Facebook were the games that people were playing. And so, you know, I felt like I had that entrepreneurial itch again. And I felt as if I had made my contribution at Wynn, and it was time for me to go and take on a bit more risk and get myself back into a place where I was a little uncomfortable. And so I kind of spun out of Wynn and teamed back up with the collection of my former co-founders from the other companies that I'd been a part of, and founded Play Studios. And so, yeah, the idea was, you know, to extend the experience of Las Vegas first on the Facebook and then on the mobile devices. And we knew to do that, it meant not just really great games, which we clearly understood how to go create, but the whole value proposition of Las Vegas, which is the more you play, the more this world of benefits kind of reveals itself to you. And, you know, what's interesting is as a model, as a paradigm, I would talk to Paul and my partner, and I would say, you know, Las Vegas is really the first social game experience. I mean, people come here and they translate real world currency into this abstracted currency, which is chips and tokens. Right. And then they play. And the more they play, well, all of a sudden the games get more interesting and this world of benefits starts to reveal itself, and you get assigned a host, and all of a sudden you get access and upgrades and complimentary services. And, you know, and I was like, that's what we need to create with the products that we're now going to go and build.
Right.
And so that was MyVegas, which when we launched on Facebook, you know, people immediately responded to it as a model and as a value proposition. And so we knew we had something. We knew pretty early on that, you know, consumers were really responding to this idea of, you know, play for free and earn for real.
Sure.
And then when we focused on mobile and opening up the mobile channel, you know, it just took off. You know, we took all the things that we had learned in going through our first development cycle and launching MyVegas on Facebook, and we kind of recrafted the game to make it better suited for mobile. Mind you, consumers engage on mobile devices in a very different way than desktop. There's, you know, shorter sessions, but far more frequent sessions. And so we crafted a version of MyVegas for mobile. So, you know, we kind of had those moments where we're looking around like, okay, this is working. And then we got to that place where we said, well, is it this specific solution that's working? The fact that MyVegas is a fun brand, and that it incorporates all of the portfolio of iconic brands that make up Las Vegas, or certainly most of them, Or is this a model that has broader application and appeal? And we said, look, we think as a model, it has broader appeal. And so, you know, we started to create more games and we diversified our portfolio. We just launched our most recent one, which is My Vegas Bingo. And, you know, we're scaling, growing it, and going to turn it into another one of our franchise products. And now with what we've recently announced and taking our company public, we're going to position ourselves to be more acquisitive. Everything we've done to this point, we've done organically. You know, we've built every team and every product and acquired every player and scaled and grown our business over the last, you know, 9 to 10 years entirely without acquiring other existing products and networks of players. And so we're excited to now take what we've built in terms of our platform, which is this Play Awards platform, and of course, our sensibilities for how to create great games and operate great games, and go apply that model now to other categories of games. And so we're really excited about that.
I recognize Paul Matthews' enthusiasm, because I met him in London when he was with WagerWorks at an ice show once, and he sat me down and gave me a whole lesson in social casinos way before they really were there, you know. And,
yeah.
And so he's still with the company. How many of your other co-founders are still with you?
You know, most of the co-founders are with us. Yeah. You know, we refer to, as we've constituted and opened up offices in different markets, we have founding groups that are part of each of those studios. So today we have studios in San Francisco, Las Vegas, Austin, Texas, Tel Aviv, Hong Kong. And so across, you know, that portfolio, we have founders for each of those studios. And, and most all of our founders are still, you know, part of the company and deeply connected to it. So I think, you know, being a founder-led business, I think is also in part what makes us unique. I think people see that how passionate we are about the company, how deeply we care about them. And that we don't just build products, that, you know, we're trying to build a business that's enduring. And the only way to do that is to really be surrounded by great people and to have an environment and a culture that really people feel like they can do their best work. So.
Right. So when MyVegas first started, MGM was your proprietary client on the Strip. I'm assuming that's still the case, right?
It is. I mean, we have a lot of partners, but we, as part of the very first commercial deal that we did, was with MGM.
Right.
And it was even before we had assembled our team and raised our money. It was it like started with that commercial agreement.
Right.
And so we agreed that for the Las Vegas Strip kind of proper, that we wouldn't work with any other resorts. We have a lot of other reward partners in Las Vegas, but they're the only resort partner. And then, of course, outside of Las Vegas, we have a number of other, you know, casino and resort partners. So,
So how do you structure the app for your individual clients to make it seem like it's their app?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what's unique, I think, about our approach, is that the experience of MyVegas as an app is something that we've crafted entirely on our own. It is composed of all these other resort brands. So as I alluded to, MGM and Bellagio and Mirage and Excalibur and Luxor and Mandalay Bay, and, you know, all these really great iconic brands, they're all represented in what is this virtual Las Vegas experience that you got on your phone and in your pocket all the time. And then, of course, we've incorporated into this world, this virtual Las Vegas world, all of these really great game experiences, these slot games.
Right.
And they are deeper and richer and, in my view, more interesting than really what you even find in the real casinos.
Sure.
And so, you know, and we introduce new ones all the time. And then there are all kinds of meta mechanics, these features that overlay the overall discrete experiences of each of the games that give you a sense of progression and allow you to unlock new features and participate in tournaments and daily missions and quests. And so all kinds of really cool things that give the product a certain amount of texture and depth that keeps you interested and engaged. You want to keep coming back so that you can harvest the value you've accumulated and go accomplish a bunch of challenges that are unique and see what new rewards there might be in the store, and then engage in the newest games that we've introduced. And so it's You know, which, look, in my view, that that certainly was the identity of Las Vegas, the right. very dynamic, constantly changing. You would come here not necessarily knowing what you were going to experience, but just with the expectation that it would be something different than the last time. And the last time might have only been a few months ago. Sure. Right. I mean, that was the identity of Las Vegas. Well, that's what makes these games work, is that whenever you come back into them, there's something fresh and new and interesting to engage with and experience. And if it doesn't quite strike you, well, then no worries. Come back tomorrow, because again, right. there'll be something entirely new and fresh for you to experience. Mm-hmm. So,
so have you done any, I'm sure you have, but what does the research show you that delivers people to the actual physical casinos from the MyVegas app?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's part of the what we've built with our platform. It's not just a cool set of features where right. people, you know, have some points that they can go redeem for rewards that show up in an app. I mean, that is part of the experience within the client of the game that right. lives on people's phones or devices. And I would highlight that the way that the benefits program, the loyalty program, is integrated in the experience, it feels very native to the app. It doesn't feel like this thing that's bolted on.
Right.
But underlying delivering on the consumer experience is this platform where we've provided tools to our partners where they can provision a reward, identify how much inventory they want to allocate to it, when it is that they want to consume, the profile of the consumer that they want to target, the various apps that they might want it represented in. So it's distribution. Mm-hmm. And then within seconds, it gets published and is available in the marketplace and across all those apps for people to now start taking advantage of. And then they do. And as they purchase those rewards in app and then ultimately go show up in our partners' facilities, restaurants, wherever they are, cruises, when they show up to take advantage of them, we also then provide the tools to help our partners assess the incremental value that that consumer is bringing to them. And as if not most importantly, a way for them to take remnant or off-peak inventory that they would oftentimes either deeply discount or that would go unutilized and expire, they mm-hmm. instead can give that to us. We then use the sophistication of our platform to align those rewards with the right profile of players, turning them into their consumers. And so the fact that we've been able to do that at scale, deliver consumers, help them measure the value and impact of those consumers and show them the return that they're getting on what is a marginal investment because they're leveraging remnant inventory. It's just proven to be really powerful.
Right. So I guess that those are some of the reasons you give them, you know, why they should align themselves with Play Studios rather than building their own social casino.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't fault people seeing it as an interesting opportunity. If you're not willing to make a substantial commitment to going out and amassing an audience at scale, well, then you're going to be relegated to offering something that's more of an amenity to kind of your traditional casino or your resort, as opposed to it really being a source of a business and a value driver for you. And I don't know that a lot of the more traditional gaming companies and gaming operators understand or appreciate that. That is the foresight that Bill Hornbuckle and Jim Murren at the time had, where they said, look, you're going to have the benefit of being able to go and build something that's totally unique, secure the resources that you're going to need in order to scale and grow it as an audience. We'll do everything we can to help you. But independent of us, we appreciate it's going to take a lot more resource, hundreds of millions of dollars, to go and turn and realize the full potential of this opportunity. And so for companies to go and take a run at it on their own, very, very difficult. And that's different in the traditional iGaming space, right? Where there's still the regulatory overlay, limited licenses, therefore restricted supply, contained to a certain geography with a well-defined and known market. You know, so for those opportunities to be exploited by the existing casino operators or licensees within those jurisdictions makes sense. It also makes sense for those opportunities to be exploited by other new companies that you might deem to be media companies that have the distribution and access to consumers, because that's just so critical. But therein lies fundamentally the difference between, you know, traditional interactive gambling right. and free-to-play social gaming, which is what we do.
For big money thrills, IGT's Wheel of Fortune slots is the one your players seek. The game that's awarded over $3.3 billion in jackpots is celebrating 25 years as a top-performing slot brand. With more than 1,100 millionaires created in a quarter of a century, Wheel of Fortune slots delivers heart-pounding thrills for every player every time. Celebrate with us as we unveil the new Wheel of Fortune games and player promotions designed to drive excitement to your floor. Visit IGT.com/WOFslots25 for more information. Now back to our podcast.
So you reached an agreement early on with Konami to feature their slots on your platform. Are they still your exclusive slot provider?
You know, they're an amazing partner, and we still have our relationship with Konami, and we have one of our apps, which is wholly dedicated to featuring all of their content. It's called My Konami Slots, not surprisingly. And it's a great product. It's been in the market for nearly 6 years, continues to grow. And as I just described, what drives its growth is its dynamism. The fact that all the newest, coolest games that Konami is shipping into the real casino markets, it is making available to us to offer up for free to our players and our consumers. And it's really proven to help promote and drive awareness for their brands and these new games that they're wanting to drive trial for and awareness of. And then the same is true for us. We get to benefit from people playing games that feel more authentic to the casino experience.
Okay, great. Have you incorporated any sports betting into any of your apps?
We haven't. No. You know, we've thought about it, but you know, we think that the opportunities that we have focused on represent a far more significant just available market to us.
Right.
You know, we elected to focus on what we thought were either the largest subsegments within that genre or mm-hmm. the most dynamic ones. And that's slots to start with. It's why we've entered the bingo market with our My Vegas Bingo products. So, but now it's time to, as I alluded to earlier, turn our attention to these other complementary genres. Sure. You know, we're looking at, you know, puzzle games, whether it's word puzzles or the more traditional match three style games right. or card-based games like solitaire and its different flavors. There's a lot of opportunity for us to exploit our model and bring this whole notion of, you know, play for free and earn for real sure. to these complementary genres and really accelerate our growth.
Okay. So you've got a lot of non-gaming partners. You know, I've seen Wolfgang Puck restaurants are partners of yours, the Smith Center, and many others. How does that work in this genre?
Well, first of all, they've been amazing partners, and the what they recognized is that, you know, we're bringing a lot of people into this market under our program, and they felt like there was an opportunity to have their brands and their restaurants, in the case of Wolfgang Puck, mm-hmm. Featured and presented in and among the collection of benefits that consumers can take advantage of when they come here to Las Vegas. And so, you know, what started off as, you know, an early pilot program, we ultimately rolled out across a lot of their different restaurants, and we're able to show that, you know, we can make a difference for them.
Right.
So, you know, the way it works, it's a very elegant model. You know, they take and craft a collection of rewards with kind of rules around how and when they can be consumed that mm-hmm. kind of helps suit them in terms of when they're needing to stimulate demand for their restaurants.
Right.
And then, as I said earlier, we use the sophistication of our platform to expose those rewards to the right consumers that ultimately take advantage of those benefits. Mm-hmm. So they've acquired a new customer, and we've been able to enrich the experience that we deliver to our players through our games.
Great. So you mentioned your international offices. Now you have an Asian app. You've got an agreement with the Hippodrome Casino in London. I love those guys, you know.
Yeah.
Resorts in Birmingham, you know. So how have those efforts been producing for them, for those clients?
Really great. You know, the all of our partners just feel like, you know, to be able to engage with a massive audience of potential consumers with an experience that, or with a game and a proposition that is more experiential as opposed to transactional,
right,
just really suits them, right? I mean, the all of, if you look at the collection of partners we have and the rewards that we offer, they're all leisure oriented, right? Cruises and hotels and restaurants and concerts and shows, those kinds of things. And so when you think about how much energy gets invested in shaping these really wonderful leisure experiences, but then when it comes time to trying to stimulate demand for off-peak periods of their business, they end up doing it with discounts and promotional offers and direct mail offers. You know, all of a sudden you're engaging with the consumer in a way that feels just very transactional, and it's corrosive, or it undermines the brand.
Right.
And what they love about us is that we feature their brands within the game as part of the experience. Mm-hmm. You know, when we launch, or when one of our cruise partners launches a new cruise line, we build a whole quest event where that cruise line and route and all of its points of destination are part of an experience that we string together. All of a sudden, like, the real cruise that they're introducing in the real world is represented in ours virtually. And as people complete those contests and events, they're encouraged to now go into the benefit store and take advantage of the actual cruise opportunities that we offer. So that level of kind of real world and kind of virtual or digital integration, I should say, just doesn't exist that much.
Sure.
And so if you really think about, you know, how many companies are there that have successfully, you know, kind of tapped into and leveraged these massive digital channels in order to drive and promote business in the kind of more traditional retail developments. And so, you know, I think more than most companies, we've found a model and a way to exploit that opportunity for everybody's benefit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So one of the other early things I read, I learned about online gaming in London, you know, back in around the 2000 year, was how big bingo was. I was shocked at how much people enjoyed playing bingo online. So how is your app, My Vegas Bingo, going to be different than the other bingo games out there?
Look, so first of all, I'll do my best to describe it, but it's hard. It is beautiful. It is executed to a much higher creative and production standard. It is feature rich. It's My Vegas Bingo. So you'd get dropped into kind of this virtual Las Vegas. You start off at the one end of the strip at the Excalibur, and you get to play bingo there and unlock bingo rooms and play from 1 to 4 cards. And as you do, you get to draw upon these power-ups that, as you're playing the game, enliven the game and increase or enhance your opportunities to get bingo. There's club and social bingo. There's collectibles that then allow you to, as you complete collections, to unlock other resorts, unlocking more rooms with new and different styles of gameplay and kind of power-up mechanics. It is feature-rich, beautifully executed. And then, of course, with this real-world value proposition of, you know, real benefits. There's nothing like it in the market today.
Right. So, you know, I've always been amazed at how many people and how much money people spend on social casinos when, you know, they don't get anything tangible out of it except for maybe their name on a leaderboard. But your product is obviously much different than that. And I can understand why people spend the money they do, you know, at Play Studios to get those real world benefits. Is that pretty much put encapsulated for you there?
I think in part. I mean, I'd fundamentally like to say the games are fun.
Yeah.
And they're a great kind of an easy escape, so that over the course of your day, if you happen to find that you got 10 or 15 minutes to fill and you want to just get away and get lost in something that's easy and rewarding, they're just fun. There's something about them that's just super satisfying. And the fact that not only can you invest your time, forget money, spending money, but just by investing your time in these game experiences, you can actually accumulate value and benefits that you would want, you know, that's not just, you know, commodity stuff that you don't necessarily care about. I mean, there's aspirational stuff, dream vacations and free cruises and all kinds of cool stuff. And so, so the fact that, yes, you know, we offer these free games that people can just engage with, they're extended with this added dimension of value, makes it, I think, makes them super compelling. You highlight that, you know, at the end of the day, people do spend money. It's a small fraction, just a few percentage points of our audience that ultimately converts and spends money on any given day. But because we have, you know, nearly 1.5 million people playing every day, that translates to a pretty large number.
Right.
But, you know, the truth of it is, a majority of the people that are engaged in playing our games and participating and collecting the benefits, they don't necessarily ever have to spend any money. So most of them are just playing for free and enjoying the experience.
Okay, great. Has the legalization of online gaming impacted Play Studios in any manner?
Not that we've seen. Yeah. You know, we obviously look at it pretty closely. We look at our players within those jurisdictions where online gambling has been approved. And we look at, as it matures and continues to grow, what are the play patterns and behavior of our players in terms of what was their behavior that predates the adoption of internet gambling and or interactive gambling, and what does it look like since? And we don't see any material impact. And in fact, in a few cases, we actually have seen some growth. And so, you know, my general view is they're distinctly different. These free-to-play social games, there's a novelty to them and just an ease with which you can kind of get in and out of the experience that just makes them really enjoyable. They, as I alluded to, have all of these extended features beyond just the core of the game experience that make them super interesting and add a ton of depth to the experience. That doesn't exist in the kind of real world and with the more traditional cash-based interactive gambling.
Sure.
And so we view them as distinctly different. They might appeal to a similar consumer, but they're devoting a, you know, different time to playing each. And so we haven't seen any impact to date.
Sure, sure. So your IPO with the SPAC, I think, is a real interesting development. Obviously, it's a real trend in the gaming industry, and going with Jim Murren, I think, is probably a good idea. He seems to have been an important player in the history of your company there. So when will the transaction close, and what are some of the details?
As far as the transaction is concerned, I don't know how familiar you are, potentially your audience is, with SPACs, mm-hmm. and how much they're necessarily talked about. But right. A SPAC is a special purpose acquisition company, and it's basically a blind trust. Mm-hmm. A group of founders will create an entity or a vehicle. They'll take it public as a shell company. A bunch of institutions will invest and put their money in trust with that SPAC. And then that group has a limited amount of time, say 2 years, to go find a company that they will acquire, mm-hmm. and post acquiring it and merging it, the operating business is the surviving business. So it assumes the vehicle and the cash that's in trust, and then moves forward as a public company. What is typical is that alongside of the money that's in trust in these SPACs, you'll go do what's called a PIPE, which is a private investment into a public entity. You'll go and raise additional capital in, or get commitments for additional capital, such that at the time you consummate the transaction, you can have far more capital available to you. And so, to put specific numbers to it, the Acquiesce SPAC, which we are merging with, Jim Murren SPAC, has $215 million in trust. We then went and raised another companion PIPE, which was originally to be $200 million, but the demand was quite strong. So we ended up sizing that up to $250 million. So the total transaction could be as much as $465 million. Now, I say that it could be that much only because what's unique about investors in SPACs is that they're given an opportunity at the point in time that the merger is to be consummated to effectively opt out. Mm-hmm. If they want, they don't like the company that's being merged with, well, then they can say, you know what, I'm going to take my money and I'm going to look to cycle it into something else. And so what's really important is that we're out in the market or engaged one-on-one with these different investors, talking about the company, evangelizing our vision for it, reaffirming and sharing the information that's publicly been disclosed so that they understand what's just so unique and compelling about our business. Mm-hmm. So that when we do get to that moment where they vote on the transaction and elect to stay in or opt out, hopefully they all stay in.
Okay.
So, but to the extent that there are what are called redemptions out of the trust, then the $215 million that is in Jim Urin's SPAC could get compressed and be something less than that. Mm-hmm. And we just won't know until we get to the point of the transaction.
Okay. So I read about a $1 billion valuation. That's pretty impressive. What do you base that on?
I think impressive meaning it's such great value for investors.
Yeah, right.
If you're doing a PIPE transaction, you're now going back into the market and with a very sophisticated group of traditionally long-only investors, you know, they're qualifying and making a decision about whether they're going to invest on the same terms. That happened. And that happened, as I mentioned, to a degree that allowed us to scale up the amount of money we raised in the PIPE. So there's all these points of validation. And so fundamentally, if you take a step back and you look at how's our business getting valued, not that differently from, you know, our peers, albeit at a discount. So it gets valued based upon a multiple of revenue or a multiple of EBITDA. And so if you look at, for us, you know, we're getting a multiple of, call it 2.5 times our 2022 revenues.
Right.
So in, you know, along these different kind of qualifiers, we're at a very deep discount to where the market's valuing mm-hmm. companies that we think are in the similar space. We don't think they're positioned as well as us because of our platform play with Play Awards. And that's what we have to prove out. So for, you know, new investors looking at us as an opportunity, we prove in history, consistent growth, profitable, all of our forecasted growth and the value I just alluded to is driven by our own organic efforts. It doesn't take into account any M&A activity, which is really the principal reason for going public. It's to have the currency, both cash and a liquid equity, that we can now use to go and buy some companies.
Right.
And whether they're small companies that have really interesting technology and products that we want to more fully exploit, or very mature, bigger companies that have existing products and players that we want to incorporate into our model and our framework, those are the kinds of things that we're going to go do with this resource.
Okay.
So, you know, the next 18 months is going to really be exciting. We're going to pretty dramatically scale and amplify our growth.
Great. You just made me feel really good because I bought a few shares last week.
Okay. Well, good. I'm happy to know that.
Great. So, and people can still buy, you can buy into the SPAC at this point, and then it'll change over to.
You can. Acquies is the pronunciation of the SPAC. It's ACIES. It trades under the symbol of ACAC. Mm-hmm. And it is effectively a proxy for our company right now.
Any interest in getting into the real money side of online gaming?
You know, look, I don't want to ever say that, you know, that it's not a possibility and we never would. Mm-hmm. We certainly know it well. We played in that industry very early on with WagerWorks.
Right.
And so we know it. We understand its complexities. I think that there are opportunities for us to participate in that industry by offering our loyalty platform as a service to the participants in that industry.
Right.
You know, imagine some of those providers having more fully realized loyalty programs with rewards benefits and, you know, particularly in markets that are as intensely competitive as some of them are.
Right.
I think there are probably opportunities for us to, you know, participate in some form, but mm-hmm. probably not directly as an operator. Yeah.
Great. So I guess the growth is going to be spurred by these M&A activities once the closing is done.
Scale our bingo product. We're launching another product in the summer. We're going to go transact on and do some M&A work. You know, it's hard to predict the timing only because it's not entirely up to us. It's a very competitive market. I want to be clear that you know, as we go out and pursue these different opportunities, you know, we're competing against other companies with history doing it, with in many cases a lot more resource than we have. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to go win them. But I feel pretty good about it. I think, you know, the reception that we've gotten and people really are responding to how uniquely positioned we are. We're game makers first and foremost. So for a lot of these founding groups that are passionate about their games, we're not just some big conglomerate, and they totally get the potential of play awards and adding that real world value proposition to their products as a value driver. So, you know, I'm pretty confident that we're going to, that'll translate to some pretty interesting M&A work.
Great. Well, Andrew, congratulations on the way you built this company and certainly on the going public here. I think that's really going to be the driver, and we'll stay in touch. I really want to see how quickly you grow and what other,
thank you,
other fields you get into.
Thank you. I just really appreciate your taking the interest and affording me the opportunity to talk a little bit about what we're up to.
Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast brought to you by IGT, where the Wheel of Fortune slots is celebrating 25 years as the millionaire maker with 25 weeks of giveaways, contests, and big money fun. Celebrate with us at IGT.com/WLFslots25. To learn more about the phenomena of social gaming, visit GGBmagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the coronavirus situation and its impact on gaming, including daily updates, subscribe for free at GGBnews.com by using the code GGB180. Don't miss a single episode of the GGB podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and Spotify today. And we'll see you next time on the GGB podcast.